From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Monday night when our colleagues at News 8 released the only official public poll of the Rochester mayoral race. Their poll has Malik Evans leading incumbent Lovely Warren by 5 points. But almost immediately, polling analysts jumped in to say, look, this race is almost impossible to poll accurately. After all, 8 years ago, incumbent Tom Richards had a big lead in the Siena poll, only to get crushed by Lovely Warren. And here's the main reason this poll's been so shaky in the past. Very few people vote in the primary. It is difficult to figure out who's going to show up at all. And that got us wondering, why? Why do so few people come out for the primaries? Infamous political kingmaker Boss Tweed once famously said, quote, I don't care who does the electing, so long as I get to do the nominating, end quote. Boss Tweed was talking about the primaries. He wanted to control who was allowed to vote, who was running in the primaries, where the money was going, which voters could even show up and participate at all. And he knew the primary is where the power was. That's where the control was. And that's one way that Boss Tweed was so successful. It's a lesson we have not really seemed to learn. The vast majority of Americans don't vote in primaries. Many only show up on election day if a presidential race is on the ballot. Meanwhile, local elections determine so much of our daily lives. Think Flint, Michigan, just for one example, and there are so many. This hour, a conversation about why so few people participate in the primaries, where many of the races get decided. My guests this hour include Paul Hippolyte, who is the founder of Leading With Our Values. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan. How are you doing?
Great, sir. Nice to talk to you. Nice to talk to Stephanie Townsend, a council member for the Pittsburgh Town Board. Stephanie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Evan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Ken Warner is a political consultant, a writer, and a community activist who has boasted about how many races he's been involved with, not to show his age, but just to show his experience. Ken, welcome back to the program.
Well, I was here when they installed dirt, so it's nice to be back.
It's good to talk to you, Ken. And Tim Nealon, professor of history and political science and director of research, scholarship, and innovation at Nazareth College. Tim, welcome back to the program.
Evan, thanks for having me.
I'm just going to ask all of you for some opening thoughts here. And, you know, we can look at the voter rolls. I mean, if you're running in a race that has a June 22nd primary, you've probably got a beat on who you think is going to show up at all, and it's just not a lot of people. Paul, why? What's going on here?
This is a issue that it's around the country, but New York State actually has one of the lowest primary participation rates, and that's for a number of reasons. One is we need to expand the amount of the access that voters have to the polls. There are other reasons, like we just don't put as much attention on primary days, but then also we have a closed primary system in New York State. So not to get too wonky, but there are a few states where regardless of your party, you can vote in a primary. Some states have limit your participation so you can't vote in, for example, a Democratic primary and a Republican primary in the same cycle, but you can choose which ballot you want to pick for the primary vote. But New York State is one of those closed primary states where if you're not a registered Democrat, you actually cannot participate in the Democratic primary. So, for example, in the city of Rochester, where Republicans don't often run, the primary actually decides the election. And so if you're not a registered Democrat, I know we're going to get into the poll later, but for the purposes of this poll, it's useless if you're counting people who are not registered Democrats as part of your decision as to how this race may play out. That's pointless. The Democratic primary will decide the election, but then back to your original point or your original question. There's just less attention that is paid to a primary. I think that's part of it. I think oftentimes people believe that the general election is where the elections are decided, not understanding how this actually plays out in reality. And then the other part is just a lot of times Democrat or people who are in a certain party I think the number one reason or reason why people vote for one candidate or another, a lot of times these days have to do with negative partisanship, which is you vote for your person because you don't like the other party. And so in a primary system, it doesn't really play out that way because you may think, well, these candidates are pretty close and they're basically supporting the same thing or something really similar. And so if the candidates aren't, if it's not very distinctive as to what they're supporting, if there's a lot of overlap, which there tends to be within a party's primary system, well, that doesn't engage, it doesn't energize voters in the same way as it does beating the other side.
Stephanie Townsend, why are so few of us interested in the primaries?
I think that there's three reasons that stand out for me. Number one, it's unpredictable when and where primary voting happens. Number two, the candidates have less contact with the voters than they do in a general election. And number three, it's unclear to voters why it matters. So I think those three things work together, along with some other factors lead people to not turn out.
Ken Warner, what do you think?
Well, I think we have to go back and remember why primaries exist to begin with. You know, before anybody ever gets to act in a primary, they have to go through the process of talking to all the Democratic committees that there are in Monroe County, for example, to gauge their to try and get the nomination, and then other people run against them. You know, 2/3 of the people are registered in a party other than Democrat, for example, and we forget that it's kind of like a club. The original purpose was that the Democrats would get together and decide who was going to be the Democratic candidate. In situations in many cities throughout the country, the Democratic Party has come to be dominant, and therefore it becomes the election. But elections are designed in this state and in many, many states to protect incumbents. And you'll find, I actually just wrote a column on this, which I'm publishing on Medium. There is a legal voter suppression that takes place where primary elections are concerned. First off, it's a change in the hours of when you can vote. Primary polling places are only open from noon till 9 p.m. as opposed to opening all day at 6. They changed the date of primaries all over the place. So, for example, in the election you referred to, where Tom Richards was ahead in the polls, he was ahead with 70% of the vote on Monday and lost the election on Thursday. And the reason was, quite frankly, they changed the date of the election. And everybody thought, well, he has 70%
He also got outworked. Didn't he get outworked, Ken? Come on.
No, not in the original election. Listen, the person who was most surprised that she became the mayor in that election was Lovely Warren. She was actually getting her hair done at the time that because she thought she was going to get creamed. It was 70%. They changed. So my point is they changed the date of elections. And the other thing is that they change the hours. They move polling places, particularly for primaries. They move polling places because they ostensibly are saving money because not that many people vote, so they change it. But a lot of people go to their polling place and find out it's not there. They don't go somewhere else to find out where it is. It's actually legal voter suppression. And I think that that's really why people have begun to vote less and less in primaries.
Can I disagree a little bit there?
I'm going to let Paul jump in before we get Tim. Go ahead, Paul.
I think in the last couple of years, at least in the last cycle, primary votes actually, the percentage of people voting in the primary has actually gone up. And so I think there, yes, he's correct that some of those things have happened in the past, but that wasn't, for example, wasn't meant, that had nothing to do with the local party's process in terms of the Richards versus Lovely fight years ago. But in recent years, the number has gone up. For example, last year it was really high, and I think that has to do with the fact that we have early voting now in New York State. We have it's much easier to ask for an absentee ballot. We've expanded the hours that people can vote, and so I think a lot of those structural changes have increased the amount of people voting And I expect we're going to see that again this year. But even with that increase, I'm going to say that 20 to 25% is probably the ceiling of what we're looking at for the primary.
All right. Let me get Tim Nealon's thoughts for some opening thoughts here, and then we've got a lot of directions we can take this conversation. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, no, I would agree with Stephanie. I think there's it's a lack of information on the part of potential voters on who the candidates are, what the issues are, but also perhaps a sense that things don't change much and that, you know, voting's not going to change anything. So irrespective of party enrollment, I think that this tends to suppress turnout in primary elections. People don't understand local government as much as they understand the presidency because that gets all of the attention. And, of course, it's like a two-year run. So there's a lot of time for people to learn. So I think that's part of it. But I'm thinking what Paul just said about early voting, that's probably going to lead to an uptick. And also, you know, I think that we're moving the primary back to June as opposed to waiting till September, as we had in the past, is going to also change things.
Okay, so Stephanie Townsend, pick the day then. Going forward, all primaries should be fixed when?
I think that they need to be on a Tuesday because people associate voting with Tuesday in this country because of the general election. In terms of beyond that, of when they happen, you know, we have the calendar. It was recently shifted some, and I think that that's fine. The when issue is in Monroe County less of an issue in the city than it is out the county outside the city, because there, even if the primary date is always the same and is well known, oftentimes in town races and in county legislative races outside of the city, you may go for years without there being a primary. So then when there is a primary, people are not in that habit. They're not in tune to, and voting behavior is largely driven as a habit. And you can't form that habit if there's a primary in your town races once every 5, 6, 10 years. So the when is also about just how competitive are these races? Mm-hmm. How frequently do they happen?
Yeah, and so I want to ask all of you about a point that Tim was making. So let me start with Tim on this. Tim, when you talk about the fact that a lot of people, particularly young people, they see things as, well, this isn't going to matter. This is not going to affect anything. This is not going to change anything. This is a Democratic primary or this is a Republican primary, and they're all the same. I think a couple of things about that. I mean, I'm sure that what you're saying is true for a lot of people who are sort of apathetic about it. But I think what causes that is a number of things. And maybe it starts with the media. I am frankly tired of the idea that the left is all one thing, or even that the right is all one thing, though I think at the moment the right is a little more monolithic than the left. I think on the political left in this country, you have actual socialists and you have, you know, capitalists who would be considered right-wing in Europe. It is a wide range. And yet we talk about politics as if there's one party here, one party there, and they are all the same. And I think some of that is the shortness of attention spans. Cable news probably doesn't help. The way we cover elections probably doesn't help. But something has convinced people that all Democrats are the same, that all Republicans are the same. And not only is that not true, I think that's really harmful, whether that's in a mayoral race, a gubernatorial race. Certainly the presidential race had, 17, 18 candidates on the Democratic side with a huge range of views on everything from war to economics. But I don't know how we get past that. I guess I'm starting with the media. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, clearly the number of media outlets available has declined in America. We all know that. So that means that, you know, you're burdening the remaining media outlets with carrying a great deal of information to voters. And they do a decent job. Look, we just had the debate featured on, you know, Channel 8.
Yep.
And so, right. And, you know, City and newspaper and the Rochester Beacon and your show do a great job. But there's a lot of candidates out there. There's a number of people running for city council. There's So this is a lot of information for people to sort through, and they don't always have the best way of accessing it in terms of knowledge. Okay, where do I go to learn about this? I mean, League of Women Voters has been active in this for years, attempting to do voter education, right? But it doesn't mean that there's a connection. I think the parties have let us down. I think the parties used to do a much better job of carrying the weight of connecting voters to candidates and connecting up the kind of information that people need to know to make key decisions. And I think the sort of de-alignment that we've seen in political parties and the rise of these blanks or, you know, non-Democrat Republican individuals enrolled in the New York State is an example of that. So I think that's part of it. Again, the media is doing a fine job. I don't blame them in terms of trying to carry content. But again, they have limited space, limited time, limited reporters to do this kind of work.
Ken Warner, what do you think?
Well, I would agree. I think the media does as good a job as they can.
Oh, but that's very kind of you. But go ahead.
Well, let's take the famed Democrat and Chronicle as an example.
Oh, I think they're great.
They've been cutting the staff for years and years and years. They don't. I mean, you can't get a reporter to come out and cover anything, but they're doing the best that they can.
Absolutely, they are. Yes,
and that's what I mean. But I would also say that people have a lot of things that distract them these days. You know, I always think to myself, I remember the days when people would say that the reason I don't vote is because Republicans and Democrats are too much alike. Now people say the reason I don't vote is because it's too divided. Republicans and Democrats don't get along. You can't really have it both ways.
That's fair. Paul Hippolyte, what do you think?
I think there is a lot of overlap, as I was saying earlier, within the parties. I think if you ask the average voter, what are the differences in between any two people in county legislature, city council, mayoral race, whatever's happening in the city of Rochester, for example, in the primary. I think for the people who see themselves as a little bit more in the know, they will probably, even for those people, they would probably fall back on, well, this side versus that side, or this group versus that group, as opposed to the distinct differences between the candidates. And that's for the well-educated voters and the people that are involved in the day-to-day of the political process. Even for them, it's still, are you part of this camp, whether it's you're part of the party or you're not part of the party, in terms of who's in power at the time. That's how we make our distinctions, not necessarily by the differences on the folks who are running on their platform, because so much of it is similar. So I don't think that it's that the voters are uneducated or don't know as much. I think they're making an educated choice and saying, like, there isn't a lot of distinction between these candidates. And it's actually interesting, Evan, because when you made your when you're making your example as to the wide variety of positions on the Democratic side, you use the presidential level, which oftentimes this is what we revert to is thinking of things. I mean, this is a country of, what was the last census, 340 million people or so. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of variation between Democrats in the Northeast versus Democrats in the Southwest or wherever. So yes, there's a lot of variation between in the Democratic Party or in the Republican Party across the country. But I would challenge folks to go look at Montgomery, Alabama, and tell me the differences between the Republicans who are running in a primary there, and or look at wherever, whatever town, whatever state you want to look at. My guess is that for the most part, the Democrats or the Republicans in that district, in that area, probably have a lot of overlap, which tends to be the problem why it's hard for the voters to distinguish between one in the Democratic primary and a Republican Party primary, to distinguish between the candidates. And so for the folks that do vote, it tends to be, this is my team versus that team, and not specifically about issues they're running on.
Okay, Stephanie Townsend, what do you think?
I think at the local level, there is a lot of difference between candidates within a party. Those differences may not be about the policy differences, but they're differences about what is their personal approach, what is their temperament, how do they engage with the voters, how do they engage with the issues. And I think there are a lot of differences, but it's the issue. I don't blame it all on the media in this regard, because at the local level, what really turns people out to vote is the person-to-person contact with the candidate or with someone that you know and trust who supports that candidate. It's not so much about what do you hear in the media, what do you even see in a candidate's mailer that may show up at your door. And so at the local level, I think that person-to-person contact is so critical, but it is oftentimes, for a whole host of structural reasons, much less in a primary race than it is in the general election.
So on the subject then of why people aren't showing up, I mean, we're trying to sort of suss this out. And, you know, Ken Warner, you said that in some ways you think that this comes close to amounting to voter suppression, what happens in some primary settings. Do you really feel like that? Do you feel that the people in power don't want many people voting in primaries?
Absolutely. I really do feel that.
Even now,
I
even
can
today.
Tell you from, well, I mean, Paul is absolutely right. The number of people who voted last year has gone up dramatically because, quite frankly, of COVID-19. If it weren't for that, New York State would have been mired in not allowing people to absentee vote. They don't want people to vote. And, you know, as someone who was a professional campaign runner, I use as an example a campaign for city council in Northwest Rochester, the last city council race that I worked on probably 4 or 5 years ago. We estimated, based on past performance, that there would be somewhere between 1,450 and 1,525 people who would come out and vote in that primary. The winner of that election won with 1,472 votes, because you can predict what's going to happen in the future by what's happened in the past. Now, there have been changes in that over the years. I know there was a congressional election a couple of years ago in Syracuse where, because there was a primary, some 3,000 people who had never voted before had registered as Democrats and come out and voted in that primary, and it changed the entire election and resulted in Rachel May winning the state Senate race in Syracuse. I do believe that there's it's voter suppression, and I don't know if that's the right words to use, but that's what I think that it is, because people who are in office do not want people who are not in office to win. It's really quite simple.
Stephanie, agree or disagree?
Can I
I'm going to have all of you jump in. Go ahead, Paul. You're chomping at the bit there. Go ahead.
Sorry. I'll be quick on this one.
That's okay.
And I think it's a little – I'm going to push back a little bit again on saying that people don't want more folks to vote in the primary. I really do think that it's a lack of difference between the candidates that is clear. So a good example is the Rachel May example that Ken used, which is the reason why there were so many new people that came out was because there was such pressure put on the Democratic candidates that cycle because of the IDC. So the challenger was his name is slipping my mind now. It was a Valensky. No, what's his name?
Valensky. Dave Valensky was in the IDC.
Yes, Dave Valensky. Correct. And the Working Families Party, the different progressive groups. But in fact, the Democratic Party that year finally got their act together and said, we're going to oppose these candidates that are siding with the Republicans. So in a lot of ways, the IDC candidates were seen by the Democratic primaries as these Republicans in sheep's clothing that were pretending to be Democrats, and that excited that negative partisanship excited the Democratic or some of the folks in the Democratic Party to then oppose their senators, and that's why the Democrats now have the majority they do. But I would argue
respect,
that
Paul,
that,
I'd like
that
to jump
had
in.
To do with the yes, absolutely.
The reason I want to jump in is I actually strategized
Rachel May's win there. We got no help and a lot of pushback from the Democratic Party, even though Valesky was with the IDC and all the rest of it. Nobody thought we could win that election. We could barely get in to talk to local committees. But what I did know is that looking at the people who had voted in the past, it looked like there would be about 11,000 people that would vote in that election. 9,000 of them lived within 4 miles of Rachel May's house. And those are the people we concentrated on. And we won that election because she worked tirelessly. She had a group of people from up-left Syracuse that went out and worked their butts off in order to get her elected. Dave Valesky had 3 or 4 times the amount of money that we ever raised, but it was through hard work and certainly not by any help from the Democratic Party. They pushed back.
You are correct in terms of the local Democratic Party. I meant the state Senate Dems. They finally got their act together, and they were putting money behind the anti-IDC candidates that cycle. So that's what I'm saying. So for years
after. But believe me, they didn't give any money to Rachel.
The state Senate Dems?
I believe
they did. I think you're talking about the local Dems. Okay.
No.
Okay.
We didn't get. I was working there cycle too.
That's why I'm pretty sure they.
It may have happened downstate. It didn't happen upstate. No one thought Rachel May was going to win.
But part of that had to do with the Dems like saying like these people are Republicans, and that excited those extra few thousand Democrats to show up to vote who wouldn't have otherwise.
All right.
Because in a typical primary, I'm done with that. A typical primary, it's hard to find a distinction.
Okay, Stephanie Townsend, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that Ken's example of Rachel May's race, it speaks back to my earlier comment about voter contact. It sounds like that's why she won that, was she walked her tail off and worked to have that contact that turns people out. And if it was all structural, then I have a hard time looking at the data of primary turnouts in the city of Rochester for the last 5 years and making sense of it, because the turnout numbers bounce all around. 2020 Rochester Democratic turnout in the primary was 30%. 2019, 18%. 2018, 25%. 2017 was also 30%, almost the same as in 2020. So, these numbers vary wildly from year to year. So that's where I have a hard time seeing it as any type of voter suppression, be it internal party politics or external. I think that it goes back more to who is running. Is it seen as a competitive race? Is it seen as a race that will impact me in my life? And do I know the candidates? Do I feel some sense of connection to one of the candidates that's going to motivate me to turn out? So, these numbers are all over the place. It's a really complex issue. Statistically, it's what we would call a multivariable issue. Lots of different factors that come to play, and it makes it really hard to predict. What we do know is no matter the year, voter turnout in primaries is low, and even voter turnout in the general is way lower than it should be for a democracy like ours.
Mm-hmm. Tim Nealon, can I ask you if you think that, generally speaking, those who are currently in power at most levels would like to see fewer people vote?
No, I would say they want more people to vote. They just want them to vote for themselves. I mean, look, if the party thought that Rachel wasn't going to win, why would they put money into a race that they need to save that money up for the general election? These are strategic moves by party members. And certainly an elected official is not happy when a primary challenger shows up to challenge them for the office they already hold. But that doesn't mean they're going to suppress voters. If anything, they're going to work harder to try to bring people out, perhaps to scare off potential primary challenges down the road. And certainly, I don't think elected officials want to do that. Again, I think Stephanie's point is accurate. these things bounce around because it depends on how salient voters think this election's going to be. And if you could make a case, right, the IDC, this Independent Democratic Caucus, was it really, you know, a group of Republicans, then you've now got a real reason to bring and drive voters to the polls. You got to make a compelling case. You got to make people think my vote is going to matter, because if they don't think it's going to matter, then why would they bother voting? It's habitual, yes, but it's also a part of civic engagement, and it's a strategy voters make in terms of their time and energy. So, yeah, we have to make a compelling case, and the candidates have to do that too. And you know, right now, there's not a huge distinct difference, right, between the candidates running for mayor, at least not based upon what they were talking about in terms of policy. It comes down to personality and leadership style.
Talking about why so few of us vote in the primaries and whether the parties and people in power want that, what the voters think about that. And we're going to hit a couple of other points on the other side of this only break with our guests. So listeners have been asking what they think about open primaries. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And we've got some of your feedback as well, as we hear from listeners who describe whether they vote or don't vote in the primaries. And if you wanted to join the conversation, email connections@wxxi.org or call 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. You just heard Tim Nealon, a professor of history and political science and director of research, scholarship, and innovation at Nazareth College. Ken Warner, a political consultant, writer, and community activist. Stephanie Townsend, a council member of the Pittsford Town Board. Paul Hippolyte, founder of Leading with Our Values. And we're right back with your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about a piece of climate change legislation that could have a big impact on our state. It's called the Climate and Community Investment Act, and it's passed the Senate and the Assembly. If it goes through, it aims to transition New York State to 100% renewable energy. Not 50%, not 40, not 60, 100%. And it claims it will protect fossil fuel jobs as well. We'll talk about how next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. First on the line from Rochester, this is Chris. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Evan, I'd like to speak for a moment to Ken's point about voter suppression. I also am a veteran of many city primaries, many, and I have to say that I have never, ever worked with a candidate incumbent who asked me to devise a strategy based on voter suppression. But there's a very practical reason that we look at voter data and historic turnout, and that has to do with campaign financing. And by financing, I don't mean the raising of the money. I mean the spending of the money. We have very limited resources usually, and we want to make sure that we apply those resources to people who have a history of voting in the same kind of election that we are going to be facing this year. So it's really a practical reason that we're looking at that voter data. It has nothing to do with suppression. It has everything to do with the smart allocation of funds for creating a compelling message.
Thank you, Chris. Ken Warner, what do you think?
Well, it is the unintended consequence of changing polling places, for example, that voter suppression occurs. And I'll give you a classic example. First off, I probably, of anybody that you're talking to, has won more primaries in the city of Rochester than anybody. But I will tell you one that I lost. And that was the recent Senate race that they changed the voting location from Las Lambayanas to a place four or five blocks away. Las Lambayanas was the center of the Hispanic community for decades. They moved the polling place and they suppressed voting by the Latino population dramatically, so that the one Hispanic candidate that was running got way fewer votes than they expected to. I mean, I'm just an old cynic, practical guy, but I've seen it happen over and over and over again. People don't want more people voting in the election because of the basic thing that you can tell what's going to happen in the future in politics by what happened in the past. Now, when I put aside my cynical part, I say, I applaud the efforts to have better voting. I applaud the idea to expand the number of people who are voting in elections and the education of it, because I've spent 25 years of my life doing that, trying to get more people to vote, trying to win elections, trying to get good people elected. But it is hard when the very process that you're working with is such that it limits the opportunity for people to vote.
Okay. Well, then you all get to pick two remedies, and we're going to enact them. You get two and only two. Ken Warner, what are your two things that you want to either codify, enact, in order to get more people participating in primaries? Go.
Vote by mail. That's all.
You just need one. Vote by mail.
Yep.
Okay. Stephanie Townsend?
Oh, you always are great with the hard questions. I certainly think vote by mail is a good one for primaries, especially because it does eliminate the changing location. I'm a little concerned by Ken's, characterization of that as voter suppression, because I think for a lot of the public, that they hear that, they don't know how this works. And so they assume that it is, a party that is doing that and overlooking the fact that, the Board of Elections is an independent body, as political as it may be, that sets those locations in coordination in the suburbs with the town clerks, many of whom are not even elected. I think it's a practical reason that, as much as it drives me crazy, that primary locations get moved. It's in part because turnout's low. So how many polling places are you going to have open to have five people come in and vote that day? So I do think that voting by mail for primaries would be one practical way of changing that.
Paul Hippolyte.
So I've done some work in other areas, obviously outside of Rochester and specifically in New York City, where they now have public financing of elections. That has allowed a lot more people to run, people who wouldn't have run otherwise because they didn't think they could raise the money or have the party's backing. So that alone has exploded the number of candidates running and the number of conversations and the different conversations that I've seen on the ground. So that's number one. So even if you have more people voting, if they're all voting and there's only one option or there's no primary at all because there's no one challenging the incumbent, well, then it doesn't matter. So you have to make things easier for challengers to run against an incumbent. So that's number one would be public financing of elections. Number two, I'd say after you then go through that process, then you need what we have ranked choice voting now in a couple of districts across the country, a number of cities have, and I think Maine is the first state to have it also. So what that does is when you go to vote, you get to rank your candidates up to five choices here, for example, in New York City, one through five, and it gets a little complicated, but basically the idea is that someone cannot win with just a plurality of voters. They have to get to a majority. So it kind of works against some extreme candidates, but also it just forces you to talk to all the voters and to engage all the voters that you possibly can. And because Ken only gave one, I'm gonna steal.
You're gonna steal his other slot. Go ahead.
Say, this is the most, maybe the most important one, which is back in the progressive era. Thank you, Ken. Back in the progressive era, when we decided to open up primaries instead of going with multi-member districts, which is what most of Europe has and a lot of parliamentary systems have, that is another huge problem that we have in the U.S., which is we have this winner-take-all, which just not to get too much into the weeds there, but basically if we don't, we have a winner take all districts versus multi-member districts, which would really change the face of our elections and would allow people with a minority view to also still be represented versus the major parties really forcing their way to get as close to the middle as possible because you want to capture as many people as possible on that first round. So I think those three changes would really encourage more people to come out and vote and would give us more options on the ballot.
All right, hitting cleanup, Tim Nealon.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to lob a controversial thing in there. I'm going to say, yeah, have an open primary. Get rid of the closed primary.
Whoa.
And let's let people from across the city of Rochester with very different views get to select the candidates that will be on the ballot for mayor, city council, etc.
All right. Well, so Tim,
you lost me on that one,
okay,
Tim.
So I knew it. I knew it.
Strong no.
You know, there's been a little too much love on the panel, and now we're going to fight. So
that's good.
So Alex just emailed saying, "I'd love to vote in the Rochester mayoral primary, but I am not a registered Democrat. Open the primary." So Tim says yes. Stephanie,
no.
You say no. Why no, Stephanie?
No. As an elected official, I am accountable to all of the residents in my town, whether they're members of my party or not, whether they voted for me or not. But primaries are an internal party matter. It's how Democrats and Republicans decide who they want to represent their party on the ballot in November. So I recognize it's a different situation in the city of Rochester where, you know, but due to a whole lot of other factors, that the election is essentially determined in the primary. But that's not how our democracy works. Our democracy is based on a party system, and, you know, it's the primaries need to be about who's on the ballot in November, and that's an internal party matter.
Could I just, you know, respond to that and say that our democracy was not founded on parties. In fact, the founders did not want political factions or parties. We have developed parties because they seem to be a natural outcome of democracy. But there are many states who still have democracy and yet have open primaries. And they do encourage people from across the political spectrum to participate. And that really would increase voter turnout in these primaries. It would get very exciting very quickly. And it might even create different strategies for candidates running for office in terms of outreach to voters. You would have to expand that out. Boy, just think about it, though. If we have only about 30% or more of the people in the city of Rochester who belong to one political party, and yet they get to pick the person that's going to essentially be the de facto mayor, I think we would all say that's not very democratic.
Okay, Paul Hippolyte.
Since we've had an elected mayor, the one that was chosen by the party often does not win. So, for example, no one ever thought that one of the greatest mayors we've had since we've had an elected process, Bill Johnson. Bill Johnson was the last person anybody thought that was going to win that primary. It's the same thing with Lovely Warren. Lovely Warren was not the favorite in that election, and yet she won. I mean, it's still an election, and we can't forget that. Though I do want to point out that if you went to open primaries, one of the things that we have in the state is fusion voting, so that parties like the Working Families Party, I used to work for the Working Families Party for a while, and parties like that would cease to exist. People want to have the Working Families Party endorsement and want to be on that line because they want to be labeled as progressives. But what's happening is that people who are not Working Families Party principled people are registering as WFP and voting and choosing those elections. And it's not right. Mm.
Paul, open the primaries, yes or no?
Absolutely not. So, as I said earlier, during the progressive era, one of the things that we decided to do was open up the primaries to the average person that they can vote in it. In a lot of other countries, this is a foreign concept. The parties pick who they want to run based on these people support the party's ideas and values and the platform. And then you duke it out in the general election. You duke it out in the election. We created a separate election, which we have these primary elections, which is instead of the party's bosses or people who say, yes, I pledge to support the party's platform, then running on that party, we say, okay, let's let the voters also decide who gets the pick. So then opening up to an open primary system, it confuses the process, in which case, as a strategist, you could easily have folks. If, for example, in the city of Rochester, where the Democrats outnumber Republicans 7-1, I know Tim said 30% of the people could decide the election, but that's not accurate. So it's majority of the city by far are Democrats, which is why the Democratic primary is the only thing that really matters in that election. But that being said, what would happen is if a Republican was running and you had an open primary system, well, we just run a Democrat in the Republican primary and then take that election also, because you can do that if there's an open primary system. So there's a lot more shenanigans that happen, but also you dilute
the power of the party and also the platform, the ideas, the policies. So your Republican Party, for example, in the city of Rochester could say, we are anti-choice, we are pro-Trump, we are whatever. And you could have a Democrat that runs, that wins as a Republican, did I say pro-choice? Whatever I said. That you could have a Democrat running that's anti-Trump, that's anti-everything that the Republican Party stands for, and they could win because there are way more Democrats than Republicans. It's not reasonable. I don't think it's a system that makes any sense.
If anything, you want
multi-member districts, not open primaries.
All right, go ahead, Tim.
No. I would just say that everything you said actually is an argument for people coming in. As you said, the primary, the number of people enrolled in the Democratic Party is much higher than Republican, yes. But the de facto election is the primary, usually. So, and that may be different this year for a lot of reasons. But
yeah, so what you want is a nonpartisan election, not an open primary. You're talking the wrong system. What you want is an open, you want a nonpartisan election, which is we do have in a number of states. So anyone can vote, and that's how you decide who wins, but not an open primary system, which is who is the standard bearer for that party. That's the wrong system.
Okay. Final thoughts on that, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. And I think, again, in terms of having somebody who declared themselves to be a Republican yet isn't a Trumpite, that person could actually win in the city of Rochester, because Rochester is, as somebody pointed out earlier, the people, Republicans in New York, are not like the Republicans in Oklahoma or the Republicans in Texas, the Republicans even in California. No, it's very different. And so the candidates, what used to be is the local candidates reflected the values of the local constituents, not necessarily some adherence to the party line coming down from Washington. And that certainly is one of the things that I think that's hurt local turnout.
All right. I'm going to give you all just about 40 seconds apiece just for some final thoughts. And I'll read a quick email from Stefan. Stefan says, Evan, the only reason I'm registered in a party, the Democratic Party, is to participate in the primaries. Both parties are meant to perpetuate the status quo. America needs another political perspective in order to implement change. Otherwise, it will always just be us against them. That's from Stefan. About 40 seconds apiece, maybe about 30 seconds apiece. Keep it tight. Paul Hippolyte, what do you want to leave listeners with as we think about the lack of participation in primaries?
We need multi-member districts. I don't think I think the voters are not as the voters are a lot smarter than we think they are, and we need to give them more choice. So more choice would also include public finances of elections. More choice would include ranked choice voting. But again, I'm going to keep reiterating that multi-member districts is also a very important way to go. And just for Tim alone, I'll say nonpartisan elections, not open primaries.
Okay. Tim Nealon, you're next. Go ahead.
I would say your vote counts, because it absolutely does, especially in a primary where the separation could be like 50 votes or something between candidates. So get out and vote.
Wow. Okay. Stephanie Townsend.
I'm going to quote Eleanor Roosevelt. Democracy is not about words, but action. So democracy does take every one of us. And so, yes, we need to get people to get out there to vote, especially in the local elections. Local elections impact your day-to-day life and in ways you may not be aware of, but we do. So get out there and vote.
Ken Warner.
I'd like to see automatic registration when you are 18 years old. And previous to that, again, I'm old. I think we should place a greater emphasis on old-fashioned civics, what it means to vote, what a primary election is, what parties stand for, and the importance of voting, so that when that person does get to be able to vote when they're 18, they know what they're doing.
Okay. Well, and Ken, since I got just a little bit of extra time, I mean, I think you were a little more defensive of the news media than I was earlier, and I took the points you made, but I do want to know if you think you've harped on, understandably, about the changes that happen, and by moving four blocks or moving the location of voting, you can, in your words, suppress it. Doesn't the news media have to also be more engaged and be consistent in how we cover and how often we cover and how much we cover and how much we alert the public on changes?
Well, in answer to that, I can tell you that in all the elections that I've worked on, I've always thought that the media has done an excellent job of supporting the candidate that I wanted to win. That's supposed to be a joke.
Don't make me laugh at this. I'm trying to be cynical about politics.
Can I pick on the media? And I'll use Twitter speak. That poll that you referenced was trash.
Okay. Okay. Well, I didn't run the poll, and I'm just referring to the fact that there was one. I didn't comment on the quality. I suppose we'll learn more on the 22nd, but I know these things are very hard to poll, and I want to thank our guests for taking their time to share their thoughts, because in all of their own individual ways, they have been very much engaged in this community, in the communities that they have lived in, and in the work to make politics more accessible to people. Paul Hippolyte, founder of Leading With Our Values, it is always good to talk to you. Maybe we'll talk in person sometime soon.
I hope so.
I do too. Thank you, Paul. Stephanie Townsend, council member for the Pittsford Town Board. Stephanie, thanks for taking the time. It's always instructive stuff from you.
Thank you, Evan.
Ken Warner, nice talking to you, sir. Political consultant, writer, community activist. Thank you, Ken.
Glad to be here.
Tim Nealon, professor of history and political science and director of research, scholarship, and innovation at Nazareth College. Thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure.
And look at Tim giving us a little spice for the last half hour there. I love it. We can't agree on everything. The world would be way too boring. We've got more connections coming up in a moment.